Welcome back to the Venturesome Podcast. Today I am here with Diana Ault, a no BS executive coach and career growth strategist who helps people take charge of aligning life and livelihood. Diana helps people build confidence, set boundaries, and cast a vision for an awesome career in life. She's also a Gallup certified strengths coach and a certified career coach. Welcome, Diana.
Thank you so much, Rachel. So nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you too. I'd love for you to start out by just telling us a bit about your background.
I basically, like you said, I have all this coaching background, but my background before that was IT. So I'm a career coach that actually has had a career, and I've had a career in something other than just like HR and recruiting. So I started my career in information technology consulting back in 1999. Long, long ago. I feel old whenever I say that now, but I spent 20 years full-time in that career where I always had one leg in people and process and one leg in technology. So I've always been like the secret decoder ring and the person that had a pulse on what was going on in an organization with how people were feeling about stuff, as well as just how to get stuff done. So that's kind of my background. And over time, I was a developer at one point, been a project manager. And more the last few years of my career, I ended up finding myself helping others with their career or with their communications with leaders, things like that, that just made work better for them. So I coached, a couple people a year on the side whenever I was still in corporate. And in 2019, I decided to forget corporate and I decided to go hang out my shingle full time for myself. And now I do a mix of business consulting, usually with small businesses, and then helping people with their careers, whether that is figuring out what they want to be when they grow up, or working on executing a job search, or sometimes just figuring out how to navigate and level up inside their current job. So that's kind of what I'm about. My biggest thing that I believe that a lot of people set aside, though, when talking about work is that what you want actually matters. So much of the narrative is all about how do you look good to the recruiter? How do you pass the ATS bots? How do you impress other people? And I want people to impress themselves just as much as they try to impress other people. So that is core to my work.
I think that's great. And I think that really aligns with what listeners would be looking for here as well. And you alluded to this a little bit, but you have this aligned career cornerstones model that I think is interesting because it's about what a person wants in their job and their career, not necessarily about overly impressing to get into that job. And so tell us about this model and what it means and how people are able to use it.
Yeah, I love talking about this. Like we were saying before you hit the record button, like eventually this is going to be a book because I keynoted at an entrepreneurs conference about it. I talk about it with every single one of my clients. I'm working on a lot of content around it to help people kind of latch onto it so they can be in charge of their career instead of sort of drifting around. But I developed the Aligned Career Cornerstones over the course of many years. Like it's that kind of thing. Nobody that has pillars or cornerstones or a process or anything, we don't invent it overnight. Like it doesn't just pop into our brain usually. It's a culmination of working with people over time. And what I noticed with people that I was working with is my clients were almost all very highly skilled, in-demand people. I work mostly with leaders in tech, so developers, engineering leaders, VPs and directors in tech roles, product and project managers, that kind of stuff. They don't usually have trouble finding a new job. Their problem is finding a new job that actually makes them happy and challenges them. And so in the course of working with people over almost 10 years, I figured out that there's four categories of things that have to be in line for work to be great. So the first is that you got to have the right work. Like you literally need to like what you do at your job. And for some people, they can like it a little bit. And if other things are good enough, that's fine. And other people really, like I always say, I'm a diva. I need to be really engaged in my work and really engaged with my people and everything like that. But the right work is work where you get to use skills that you're interested in building or developing or leveraging. You get to do tasks that you actually like on projects that you care about. And you can hit that state of flow fairly often, you know, where you lose track of time, or it's almost like play. You're really in your genius. Everybody has stuff at their jobs that sucks. You know, like nobody wants to fill out a time card. Nobody wants to do, you know, a lot of people don't enjoy doing like administrative paperwork, especially people in sales. But if we can get to the point where your work is 80% stuff that you like to do, and that's at an appropriate level of challenge, and only about 20% of the nonsense, you're a heck of a lot happier than if it's the other way around. And a lot of times I work with clients that find it's the other way around. The second cornerstone is leadership. And the leadership cornerstone is about two things. It's number one, about your boss, because we constantly hear, you know, people don't leave jobs, they leave bosses. You know, that's somewhat true, somewhat not true. But no matter what, whether that's actually true or not, you're having a bad relationship with your boss can ruin your day. So you want to have the right leader for you. One thing I don't like is when people get really lazy about the term micromanagement. Everybody says, I don't want to work for a micromanager. But I encourage people really think about that. What kind of working relationship do you want? Because one person's micromanagement is just the right level of support for another person. So you've got to get specific. The second aspect of leadership is basically the strategic direction of your company. So what's the C-suite doing? You know, are you in an industry that should be growing and for some reason your company is not growing because the strategy is off in some way? Or are you not seeing things, you know, is the communication line from the actual worker bees up into the executive ranks, is that blocked somehow? And do you have trouble figuring out what the vision of the company is? All those kinds of things. So you can have the best boss in the world, but it might not be great for your career. And for some people, especially as they get into, you know, more leadership roles, it's more and more important that the company that they work for has, you know, big initiatives that'll carry them forward and, you know, be important for them to drive. The third thing is environment, or what I call the foosball. It's like the foosball category. Really, environment is all the things that make your work and your life work together. So that could be perks in the office, like snacks or foosball or whatever. There's a lot more important things in there as well. So this is things like being paid fairly in comparison to your peers at your job, in comparison to the market, having the type of benefits that you need, and also having a life that works with your work. So the name of the game, especially ever since COVID started, a lot of people talk about work from home, but really it's flexibility that people want. They don't want to be told you have to be sitting in this dumb cube, you know, from 8 to 5 every single day that you drive 45 minutes each way to. They want to be able to go to Johnny's soccer game at 3:30 on a Thursday every once in a while. And so then the last thing is culture. And people often confuse environment things, especially perks, you know, the pizza parties and the, you know, offsite meetings. They confuse environment things with culture. And I have a specific definition of culture, that is values in action. So when a person is looking at culture, they want to look for two key things. Number one, is there sufficient alignment between your personal values and the values of the company for you? So some people want to have like, they want a lot of overlap on that Venn diagram. You really see that. I mean, ministry and nonprofits and things, a lot of serving and helping professions are ones where people often want really tight alignment. And other times people are just like, I want to work and I want to be challenged, but I don't need this work to be that much my identity. So as long as the values are not in conflict with my values, I'm going to be happy. So that's what culture is about. The other aspect is how those values are lived, because values don't mean anything if the only place they show up is on the company website. So I like for people to look for markers and ask questions about how are these important values that they're saying they have play out in real life, in policy, in practice, in day-to-day work. So that's the model.
That's really a great overview, and I really appreciate how you've defined each one, because I think for some people, say work might be extremely important and they are less concerned with maybe the environment. So I'm sure there are certain corners of the cornerstones that are a little bit stronger for some people than others.
Yes.
Right?
And I love that you brought that up, because sometimes people say to me, well, like, Diana, there's no such thing as a job with all four. And I'm like, well, number one, I disagree with that. But sometimes you've got to go through a progression. You know, if someone is early in their career and finds themselves in a job that's kind of, I mean, where it's just like, okay, well, I'm getting paid enough to pay my student loans and the work is okay. Like, sometimes that's good early in your career. You're basically learning how to be a professional and you're learning a lot about what you like and what you don't like. But as you progress through your career, especially if you put effort into making sure that you're always sharp in your profession, you can get more and more close to having all four of those things done, you know, really showing up in your job. And if you don't, you can always go scratch some of the itches elsewhere. So one thing I talk to people about a lot is if they're not getting to use some skills that they're really interested in learning on the job, we live in the age of the side hustle. Like, if you want to learn about marketing and you're a software developer and you can't figure out a way to do that, then start something, like start doing freelance coding. You'll have to learn how to market yourself real fast, or decide that you're going to learn a platform like HubSpot or Salesforce or something like that that supports marketing. So there's all kinds of ways to fill in gaps if you need to on some of these things. But it doesn't have to be all of them. You know, some people can work for anybody. Like, as long as their boss is not literally standing over them, verbally abusing them, they don't care. I'm not that person. Like, I need a lot from my boss. I'm a diva. I want greatness in all four, but I like to have a boss as a sounding board. And so if I can't get that kind of relationship, it doesn't work for me. Other people could care less. It's all about what you need.
Yeah. So you can't tell someone these are the cornerstones you have to have, or these are the factors of the cornerstones that you have to have in the job, because it's going to look different. You know, yeah. For me, remote is really important for me.
Yeah.
But some people I've known who have told me, oh, I would hate remote. I'd like going into the office. And as an introvert, I'm always like, really? you want to go into the office? But
yeah. Yeah, it's a thing. And what's so interesting about it is there are a few things that I think almost everybody needs or eventually wants to progress towards. But it's not working at home. It's working where you want to work. Do you see what I mean? Like, there's a difference between saying I want to work at home and saying I want to work where I want to work. I know people that also want to work in an office. I talked to a friend of mine who is an executive. He's a CTO for a small startup, and they actually have an office. And he was kind of excited about that because he had worked at home for a long time. The man has 5 children. So he said if he had found a job that was fully remote, he probably was going to go get a co-work location anyway, just so he had somewhere to go. So it's about what you need, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some signs that you're lacking alignment in one of these cornerstones in your current role?
So I love this question so much because a lot of times the people I think that actually are at the most risk of having their career go awry are not the ones where their job sucks across the board. Because when your job sucks across the board, you know faster that you need to make a change. So what I worry about are the people who have jobs that are kind of mediocre. So what I think are some of the signs that you're lacking alignment is really it's feelings. And for a person that works with a lot of tech people that want data and rationality in all of their decisions, it can be really hard sometimes to talk about feelings. But if you're feeling resentment in some way, like that low level of like, why the hell can't I just do X? Or, oh, you know, we had 10% inflation last year and our raise was 3%. Like, this is ridiculous. And why did they make me come back to the office 3 days a week and I'm just still on Zoom with people? Like, I'm never in a room with people. Like, when you start asking your questions like, oh, why the hell are we doing this? Or why can't we just, or does this really have to be that way? That's like a low grade sign that you're starting to miss alignment. And it doesn't even mean that somebody is doing anything wrong. I think a lot of times people will look at, oh my gosh, like 3 of my 4 cornerstones are not aligned. And what do I do? And oh my gosh, does this mean the company is terrible? And the answer is no, just means that it's not a fit for you. And that doesn't even mean that you have to leave the company though, because sometimes that's when you need to go try to pursue a transfer or you've kind of capped out and you're getting bored in your role. And that means it's time to chart a path to, you know, what's that next promotion or something like that. So, but yeah, I'd say those low grade little nagging questions are the biggest indicator.
Is it ever the case where someone is missing something? So say maybe leadership's fine, environment's fine, and culture's fine, but the work isn't, that they could stay at the organization and just ask for different things. Like there's maybe some work
all
that they
the
could
time.
Do.
It happens all the time. And if you think about people that work at the same company for, you know, even most of the time, if they're there for more than 5 years, and definitely most people that are at a company for longer than 10 years will have transfers. They will have, whether they might still be like a software engineer, but they move to a new kind of product, or, you know, they take on more of a lead role, or they slide on over to learn automated testing, or they start taking a little bit of a helping of the project manager. It happens all the time. And so it's important to get clear on what it is that you want. You know, what's that thing you're itching to learn? What's that thing that you think sounds cool? What's that new project that sounds kind of sexy? And you want to see if you can participate in it. It happens all the time. Like, I don't think anyone could ever stay at a company for longer than a few years if they don't experience this. So that's my take on it. There are also times like this is a real thing. So I talk to people a lot that think they have an issue in maybe just one of the cornerstones, but really they have an issue elsewhere. Or they say, I love everything except, and really it turns out when you dig deeper, there's a much bigger problem. So let me give you an example. There's a woman that I met at a conference recently who has aspirations to be a business analyst, like an IT business analyst. And she's been functioning in that role for quite some time, but without the title and without the pay. And we are talking about, I don't remember what her title was. It was definitely not business analyst, not even like junior BA or anything like that. But her pay was off by like almost 50%. And so she came to me and she said, I love everything. The only problem is this one environmental factor of pay. And I said, hold on a second. How long has pay been a problem? And she said, you know, it had been over a year. And then when we dug, we found out she'd actually been promised a promotion and a title change in January, and it didn't happen. And I said, okay, so this, you know, it's been a while. You love your boss. You love the work you're doing. That's great. It's pretty flexible for you. What does your company say on the website or in whatever, you know, materials on the intranet, or what does HR say about how they value their employees? And she said, what do you mean? And I asked, well, do you hear messages like our employees are our most important asset, or we like to promote from within, or, you know, different things like that? And she said, oh yeah, of course. And I went all Dr. Phil on her. And I said, how's that working for you? And she's like, it's great for everybody except me. And I said, well, the other people don't pay your bills. So whether it works for everybody else is irrelevant if it's not working for you. And so when we went through it, we realized that she had a major culture problem, because there's a value out there of we value our employees, but that's not happening for her because she's repeatedly being promised things for well over a year while performing at a high level in something that's considerably higher role and is not being rewarded. So that's an example. Another person that I remember talking to is one who had a job where he loved the work itself. And he did cool stuff. Like he worked in a brand management and artist relations for a musical equipment company, like of all things. That was, he's a friend. And so, like, not my normal sector that I work in, but when I went through things with him and I asked him some questions, I realized that work was the only thing that worked. He was working over 60 hours a week. He was way underpaid. His boss was a pinhead. And so I just looked at him and I said, your job is 75% wrong. And it was kind of a wake-up call for him. And he really aspires to be an entrepreneur. So that's a path that he's going down. He's getting really close to where his side hustle can cover being employed. So, but yeah, it's like, you think this job is wonderful, except for this tiny thing. And really 75% of it is wrong. So,
Yeah. Is it because people, they don't want to recognize sometimes the things that are tough, like they just have a blind spot, or that they're kind of pretending it's not a problem?
There's a lot of pretending, because going to look for a job feels hard and scary, especially if you haven't done it for a long time. And the person that had the 75% wrong job, I think had been at that company for over 10 years. So, and he also had, like, he worked with cool people. Like, he literally had Steven Tyler's phone number in his work cell phone. Like, that was one of the artists that he managed. So there were some really kind of exciting and neat things about what he was doing. In his case in particular, so for people that say, I like what I do, they are at the most risk of not recognizing the other problems, because when you think about time spent, you spend the most time on the work. You know, most of us spend 30 minutes a week, if we're lucky, talking to our boss directly. And then maybe some drive-bys and, hey, how's that project going? And can you please do this task by Friday kind of stuff. But you spend almost 8 hours a day or more doing the actual work. So it really gets hidden if some of the other factors are not working for you. So like every other Friday, if you love your work and everything else is wrong, you feel a pinch every other Friday when the paycheck hits and you're like, oh, this should be bigger. And you feel a pinch when your boss yells at you, and you feel a pinch if there's some sort of incident that happens that makes it very clear that the values are out of alignment, but you spend 90% of your time, happy with the work that you're doing. But that doesn't mean that it's great. And the problem with that is that the leading cause of burnout is not actually the number of hours you spend on the job. It's whether work is in alignment with what you need. And people tend to drop off a cliff. It's like they'll all of a sudden recognize that everything is a hot mess. And then they go into burnout really, really fast whenever that happens. So if they're not being self-aware about what they need, and if they're not proactively seeking those things out or trying to create that for themselves, they're at a higher risk of, when burnout hits, it's worse and harder and deeper and longer. So,
yeah, I think that totally makes sense, because for a while you can be like, everything's fine, everything's fine. But really it's that picture with the dog with his coffee and the flames behind him. But you're ignoring the flames.
Yes. Yes to all of that. And, you know, I have kind of a fundamental belief. This sounds a little bit woo-woo. I'm not super woo-woo. I like to say I'm woo adjacent. Like, I have a couple crystals on my desk, but I don't know what any of them are for, because somebody gave them to me. But I think the universe whispers at us. And then when we don't listen, it talks a little louder, and then eventually it yells at you. So in my case, I had a lot of alignment problems at the last job I had in corporate. I liked most of the work, but there was entirely too much of it. I liked what the culture was supposed to be, but it wasn't proving out to be that way. And the thing that kept me there the longest is I worked for this amazing leader, like the kind of boss that doesn't just help you with your work, but lets you stretch and literally helps you become a better human. They have that high of an impact. Well, I did not recognize how bad things had gotten until that leader got promoted into a different business unit. And there was no way to follow him, because you can bet your sweet bippy I would have tried to follow him if I could. And then suddenly, and he was a director. So for a little while, I was reporting directly to a VP who didn't even bother to call me and talk to me for 3 weeks after my boss left the team. So I was just like flapping in the wind all by myself. And he also had some there were some ethical things that he did wrong. And then he hired like a very weak leader to lead our team. And every single person within 14 months all left. Like, every single person on that team left within 14 months under that weak leader, and with some of those changes and things like that. So that was a really egregious example, but I mean, it made me finally, that to me was the universe yelling at me though. Like, it's time for you to be done. And I chose to leave with no job, because I decided that my job was going to be my business. I was going to give that a go. So,
yeah. So it sounds to me like not only should individual professionals be looking at what their cornerstones are and how what they need in their jobs, but organizations should be thinking about these cornerstones too, to make sure they're delivering to people what they need to stay and succeed, because it's really expensive in 14 months to lose an entire team and have to replace an entire team, all because they made the company made some poor decisions.
Yeah. This is a lot of what a lot of the employee engagement stuff is about, but a lot of that is really shallow. And that's an area that I pay attention to. I can't say that I'm, you know, an employee engagement expert or anything like that. There are plenty of better people for you to have on your podcast to talk about that. But I do think companies need to keep their eye on this. And one of the most important things that they can do is, well, for one, there's a couple of things that come to mind. One, stop promoting people that are functional experts into management just because they were a functional expert. The skill of leading and nurturing people and building a team is entirely different than whatever that technical thing was that they became known for. So especially, you know, medium and big companies, build yourself career paths for people to maintain or remain in their technical role that they love. You know, make sure that there's a principal engineer. Make sure you can be a continuously progressing project manager all the way through your career, instead of feeling like you have to manage people. Because a lot of people that take management roles only do it because there's nowhere else for them to go. And then recognize that the skills that got you to be a wonderful senior, whatever you are not necessarily the skills to be the director of the group. So companies need to do that. The other thing they need to do is make sure that their policies and all their other messaging in the environment is friendly to people that want to move around. So in many companies, there's this attitude of, if you wanted to transfer, like, it's somehow disloyal. Like, if I worked in product management for years and suddenly I want to go work with you, you work in marketing, right, at your company. So if I suddenly want to go, you know, work for you in the marketing department, there's all kinds of blockers set up inside companies that can prevent that. Some of it is attitude, you know, it's not even anything that's hard in the process. But then there's a lot of stuff of, you know, you have to wait so long in order to transfer, which I kind of get that a little bit. I don't think it's unreasonable to expect someone to stay in a role for a year before they try to transfer. But when your current boss can block you from applying for a transfer, that is a recipe to lose people. Because if the reason that they want, if one of the reasons they want to move is that they don't get along with their boss, that and their boss can block them, a lot of people will just say, forget it. They won't even try to move internally and they'll look externally. So yeah, those policies should be eliminated. There's no reason for your boss to know that you're trying to interview internally until you take an offer and you have to build a transition plan, because they damn sure don't know until you give 2 weeks notice that you're leaving the company.
Yeah. So if somebody's listening right now and they're thinking, oh, wow, I definitely have a work problem or a leadership problem or a culture problem, what should they do next? Like, now that you are recognizing and hearing that voice saying something's wrong.
Yeah.
What's that next step?
So the thing that I like for them, Gia, most people start this with what's wrong. Which is fine, because that's like that little resentment thing that I said was building, those little questions in the back of your head that I said was building. I think writing down what's wrong or what you don't like is a good starting point. But the most important next step is to write down what good would be. So it's not enough to say, I don't get paid enough. You want to say how much you want to get paid. And then you also want to back it up with understanding, do I actually justify that right now? Or is that something that I need to spend some time building towards? But the biggest mistake, you know, there were a lot of stats going around, especially when, you know, the great resignation for, like, especially the first 9 months of 2022, like, the great resignation was still one of the most talked about terms out there. There was a lot of articles about people bouncing back, being boomerang employees or leaving their new jobs within 90 days. And my experience is that every single client I've had or person I've known where I really get to have a conversation, when they boomerang like that, or they leave and go to the third job in a short period of time, it's because they ran away from something that they didn't like, instead of figuring out what they wanted to run towards and going for that. And the mentality around that is entirely different. And the way you search can be a little bit different, all that kind of stuff. Because when you've sat down and said, this is what I need, this is the work that I want to do, this is the skills I want to build, this is how many hours I want to work, this is how far away from the office I want to be, this is the tap dancing class I want to be able to take every Tuesday night at 5 p.m. This is how much PTO I want. This is the type of working relationship I want with my boss. This is the sort of career progression that I want. These are the benefits that I need. These are the values that are important to me. This is what that looks like. When you write that down on paper, you stop smashing the easy apply button like 100 times a week just to get an opportunity to escape either a bad job or, if you've been laid off, unemployment. And instead, you are looking much more carefully and talking to more people about what you need and what value you bring to the table so that you can move towards something. Since 2015, every time I've been in the job market, I've submitted less 5 applications or fewer. You made the face everyone makes whenever I tell them that. They're like, how the hell did you do that? And it's because I figured out what I wanted. Now, I probably had 5 times that many networking conversations with people about what I was doing to help lead me to, oh, this is the kind of company, or, ooh, this is another role that I should investigate that would use a lot of my skills. When you're just running away, you smash easy apply for the job title that you have today. And then you're not as careful to try to find something aligned to what you want. And this stuff, you know, I'm talking about it all in terms of, you know, being an employee, which I mostly work with employees, but I also work, you know, I've done some coaching of entrepreneurs. I have a couple of career coaches that have hired me to help me help to basically be a thinking partner of like, what should I be doing in my business to make my business work the way that I want to work? You've been doing this longer than me. And I work with some executives that own businesses on this stuff. And the principles apply. I say I'm the worst boss I've ever had because I'm very demanding. And I literally hired a part-time project manager to help hold me accountable to not working too much and to not doing things that I shouldn't be doing, you know, like things that should be delegated or things that are just dumb and not adding value. Her job is to help me manage projects, but also to help keep me from doing stuff that I shouldn't be doing so that I can be a nicer boss to myself. So these principles apply to any entrepreneurs that you have in your audience as well.
Yeah, definitely. So is there anything that I didn't ask you about today that you wanted to make sure you hit on?
One thing that I think people need to do is get really honest about what they need instead of what someone else said is cool to want. I have a rant that I've posted, you know, I sometimes post popular posts on LinkedIn a couple times. And one of the ones that I posted is that it is absolutely ridiculous when people in tech say that they want to work at any FANG company. So FANG, for those of you that are not familiar, is Facebook, or now Meta. So it could be Mang, but it's Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. So people will say, I don't care. I just want to work at a big tech company. I want to work at a FANG company. That's dumb. For the primary reason that it's dumb is that the cultures are entirely different. So one of the ones that I like to cite the most is the difference between Apple and Google. So Google is very messy. And what I mean by messy, like, I've never worked there, so I don't know what it's like day to day, but their culture allows for experimentation and for a lot of like, let's try this product. And if it doesn't work, then we're going to sunset it. Like, they're not scared to do that. They don't care that Google Plus never took off. I mean, they care because they spent a lot of money, but they knew that we did it and we didn't know if this is going to be a viable social media competitor. And it didn't. And like, the world didn't end and Google didn't collapse over that. But there are other companies where you would have to go through so much vetting that you'd never have the opportunity. Another thing about experimentation is Gmail, which is the number one email platform on the planet, was the result of what Google has as, you know, it's commonly called 20% time. So 20% of time at Google can be on a project that you're interested in. And so somebody just came up with the idea for Gmail, and then some leader found out about it and eventually it turned into one of their major lines of business. Apple is very design driven. And since they're so hardware driven, they have to work differently, because it's very different to change SaaS web software than it is to like fix things if you put out a new version of the iPhone and it's broken, or, you know, it doesn't work, people hate the design, whatever. So there's nothing wrong with either of those at all. But I find it very hard to believe that a person that's going to be extremely happy at Apple is also going to be extremely happy at Google. So if you line out what it is that you actually want, you can figure out, well, there's five companies in this FANG thing. I've done my research on myself and I've talked to people, and I think two of them would be a great fit for me. Then go pursue those two and let those two know why you think you're a good fit, instead of just saying, I want to be in big tech. So I hope that helps. That's a big, big thing that people mess up a lot. And what, you know, even if it's not FANG, some people say, I want to work in tech. I want to work in this industry. I want to work at a big company. I want to work at a small company. If you can get clear on why you want the things, it helps you, because you can pursue better matches, and you can also communicate not just to the companies you're applying to, but to your network, what it is that you want, because that's how you find the company you didn't even know existed that's going to be perfect.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really good point, because sometimes people, especially young professionals, they just want that brand on their resume. They don't know what that brand means and what that experience will be like. And then sometimes they even get into those roles and they discover they hate it.
Yeah.
And they're not thriving.
Yeah. And I also think it's okay. I think it's okay if they go, you know what, there's a lot I like about Amazon, and I'm saying Amazon because I've known people that have had this experience. I'm not trying to disparage Amazon. I have a box from Amazon twice a week at my doorstep. So anyway, it's okay to say, I'm going to take it for the hit and have like a really pressure filled life, so that I can get the experience of working with Amazon. That is okay. But you need to walk into it eyes wide open and say, you know what, this is how I'm going to adjust my life. This is why I'm okay with it. This is why I'm picking this high pressure company that has a lot of hours over that high pressure company that has a lot of hours, and then move forward. It's fine to want that. I do think it looks absolutely ridiculous when people put X whatever on their LinkedIn headline. Like, that just makes recruiters laugh at you, just so you know, everybody out there in podcast land. But if that's what you want, that's fine. But like, walk into it with eyes wide open, because if you're making the choice to work in a company like that, you're making the choice also to have trade-offs in the rest of your life. And you can't make it work if you aren't thinking about that. If you think that you're going to be able to, you know, also keep working 20 hours a week on your side hustle while you're working at Amazon on one of their top projects that's the most high profile, you're going to find yourself not sleeping and maybe compromising health. And that's usually not something that we want to do, even if we don't admit it until we're actually sick.
So Venturesome is all about being ambitious, brave, and curious. So what Venturesome advice would you give to your younger self?
Ooh, I would say, I wish I would have defined success for myself more. I wish I would have taken time to do that earlier in my life, because I grew up in a house, my parents were both academics. They were both community college professors, and they both at various times served as department chairs, you know, beloved instructors. They're great at what they did. They worked the same place for a million years. And so tenure and position was more valued in my home whenever I was growing up. And so when I got laid off twice at the beginning of my career, I kind of thought I was a failure. Now, it was from the tech wreck, and I found jobs again faster than a lot of people. But in my head, I was like, oh my gosh, did I just spend all this time getting a master's degree and like going to school and building my life to this just to be a failure? And it was because I had kind of a jacked up definition of success. And that definition of success has evolved over time. So You know, for some people, it's about money. For some people, it's about title. For some people, it's about, you know, getting a patent or something like that. But for me, I wish that I would have really sat and thought about what my definition of success was earlier, and that I would have made more of a point in my 20s and 30s of revisiting it regularly to see if it was still true. Because one of the reasons I see people that are in their 40s that are just like worn out and miserable is because their ability to have the stamina for a hard charging job when they were 26 is not the same when they have a mortgage and 3 kids and a, you know, a spouse and all that stuff when they're much older. So
yeah, their priorities have shifted. So success, the success they're driving themselves to doesn't align anymore.
Exactly. And when you also think about what your definition of success is, it leaves room for creativity. So it leaves room for like, and one of my clients I was talking to was like, I've got to make X $1,000 a year. And I was like, hang on, talk to me about, because they were trying to, it was actually the guy I was talking about earlier with the 75% wrong job. So he took another job and it was more of a running away situation. And then he ended up leaving that job after just a few months and was kind of freaking out because he's like, what do? I'm close to being able to really be full-time in my business, but not quite. Oh, I think I need to go get a job making whatever, $80,000 a year. And we sat down and looked at it. And I said, buddy, you told me that you're going to have a new client starting in April. All you need is to find $10,000 to bridge a gap till April. That's a way different problem to solve than going to get a new full-time job at 80K plus. So he was able to think differently about that. And I haven't caught up with him lately, so I don't know exactly where he's at, but just, we reframed the problem. It wasn't, I need a job for 80K a year. It was like, oh, well, I'm going to have enough to feel comfortable between my business and my wife's job in April. So how do I get to April? I'm like, you could drive Uber till April. I mean, you could do all kinds of stuff. So
yeah, that's a really great perspective. Diana, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate your insights, and I think the listeners will as well. Where can people find out more about you and the services you offer?
The best place to go is my website, dianaalt.com. There's a little mini overview that lays out a little teaser of the Aligned Career Cornerstones, and I'm starting a blog soon, so hopefully sometime in the next like month or two, I'll have up even more details about the Aligned Career Cornerstones. So my website is good, and you can learn about some of the services and even book an intro call or just a single coaching session there if you'd like.
Great. So. And I'll be sure to link to that as well for people.
Thank you. And I also have an email newsletter. I email people every Friday. So if you go to the site and you just want to smash the big green Let's Connect button, you can get added to that too.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much.